For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get no doubt.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on Fire. We are honored today to have as our special guest Missouri Congressman, Representative in the House of, in Washington, D.C., my good friend Congressman Eric Burleson. He's on kind of a short fuse today. He's got to go vote. And so we're going to ask him some, Congressman, I hope I'm not putting you on the spot. But one of the things that's been bugging me for, well, since October the 7th has been two things. One is that, as a staunch America First Republican, I've been kind of surprised about the, desire to spend money on overseas wars and when we have a completely open border. I'm also surprised to see that Republicans, at least one of the Missouri Republican members of the House of Representatives, voted to expel George Santos after... everybody's been talking about, at least on the Republican end of the spectrum, being opposed to cancel culture. And the other thing that I think all Republicans were strongly in favor of until recently was freedom of speech. And now all we're hearing about is censorship of certain political ideas. So I was going to jump right in and talk to you about Congressman, ex-Congressman now, George Santos, and I know you voted against his expulsion, but could you tell us a little bit about your thoughts as to why?
Yeah, thank you, Mark. You're an attorney. You defend people in court all the time, and you understand that we have to be a nation that respects the rule of law and respects people's rights to have a trial by a jury of their peers before they receive some kind of punishment. And the precedent in the history of the United States is that the only of the six members that were expelled, George is the sixth. The five previous ones, three of them were done during the Civil War because they were members of the Confederacy. And then the other two had actually been convicted of a crime. So that was the standard before. Apparently now the standard is if you've been indicted. And as you know, it's easy to indict someone. They say you can indict a ham sandwich. So I think it's a dangerous precedent to say that because he was indicted, that we are going to throw him out. And sure, the stuff he did was awful and there's no excuse for it, but he deserves his day in court. Now, and if he is found guilty, then I would have been happy to vote to expel him. But until that point, I don't think that it's – I think we're setting a dangerous precedent.
Well, you might find this hard to believe, but I actually think that sometimes the press reports stuff that isn't actually true. And sometimes people get prosecuted for things that aren't actually true or aren't actually crimes. And, one of the things that we talked about, and you were running for your U.S. House of Representatives same time I was running for the U.S. Senate. And what everybody talked about every night when we're hitting the campaign trail – is the right of people to vote and then preserving our right under the Constitution and under our representative republic to express our opinions by exercising our right to vote. And, when it was coming up time to have the vote on George Santos, I posted, why don't we let the people in the 3rd Congressional District of New York decide who they want to have in Congress instead of having Congress decide that?
Yeah, exactly. We base now the people of the 3rd Congressional District don't have anyone to represent them. I agree with you. They voted him in. They had the opportunity to vet him and they felt confident to vote him into office the way he was. So who am I to remove him? And I think that if he had been convicted, as has been demonstrated in history, with the other people that were removed, if he had been actually convicted or pled guilty to a crime, then I would be in favor of expelling him. Yeah. For example, Jamal Bowman, I mean, he's the actual member of the House who has been found guilty of a crime, or he pled guilty to a crime. But George Santos was just indicted.
Yeah.
And so, and yet we're not going to expel Jamal Bowman. The Democrats are not going to vote to expel Jamal Bowman. And we would need to have all the Republicans and at least half of the Democrats in order to expel him. And they're never going to do that because the Democrats defend their own no matter what they do, no matter how heinous the charges are. I mean, look at this Menendez guy in the Senate. He's being investigated by the FBI, by the IRS for receiving gold bars from, I mean, you know, that demonstrates how bad the U.S. dollar is. The U.S. dollar is so inflated that corrupt, dirty politicians are, cash is not good enough. They have to accept gold.
And you know, the best part of that is those gold bars that were seized at his house, they've got serial numbers stamped on them, which were the numbers reported by his co-conspirator as being gold bars that were stolen from him back in 13 and then recovered. So he actually had, you know, physical evidence of him taking these bribes, and yet he's still sitting in the Senate and nobody's talking about removing him. Then how about Eric Swalwell, right? Sleeping with a Chinese spy, you know, our biggest enemy in the world, the only genuine threat to our republic, and you know, no one's talking about booting him out. And it just, you know, then let's do this one. What's the biggest complaint about George Santos? That he lied. That he lied on his resume, that he lied about his education, that he lied about his sports in college. Well, how about Adam Schiff? Here's a guy that's lied about everything. Guy who stood up in front of the American people with regard to the first Trump fakey-do impeachment and pretended to read a letter while he was making it all up, or read the transcript of a telephone call when he was just making it all up out of whole cloth. If we're going to throw people out of Congress for lying to the American public, lying to the electorate, what about Adam Schiff?
Yeah, and Joe Biden himself.
Yeah.
If you go back in history, look at when he first was running for president, he got caught in all of the lies. He was touting that he was the valedictorian. He basically lied about his resume and his background when he was running. So whenever this happened to Santos and this news came out to Santos, the press asked me what my thoughts were about George Santos. And I said, looks to me like he's qualified to run for president.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and then think about this, though. When you're talking about it, everybody's saying, oh, George Santos is this terrible guy who's got 23 indictments or counts of indictment against him. Well, how about President Trump? I mean, I'm the biggest booster of President Trump you'll ever meet, and I fully expect him to be reelected president of the United States, but he's got 91 felony counts against him. If that was the criteria upon which you couldn't hold office, you know, if I was a Republican voting against George Santos, I'd be a little circumspect next time I go to a Trump rally.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And as you know, the left has used the Department of Justice and the justice system as a bludgeoning tool against us conservatives, and to intimidate us, and sometimes drain our wallets dry, drain our coffers, which is what they're doing to President Trump.
Yeah, and Mike Lindell, and the list goes on and on and on. It's the persecution is a punishment. I mean, it's designed to quell dissent, to frighten people out of taking strong political positions that are contrary to the swamp, and to just, like you say, exhaust people economically. And, you know, we now live in a world, and, you know, as a lawyer, I can tell you this is true, where the law is now made up ad hoc for the purposes of punishing political opponents. You get judges in jurisdictions where they're not being honest. You get prosecutors that are funded by Soros. You get jurors that would convict Republicans no matter what they did just for being Republicans. And you got a Justice Department that are throwing January Sixers in prison for years and sometimes decades for doing essentially the same thing that gentleman that pulled the fire alarm did, except not so directly. And so, you know, there's no justice in this world anymore.
There isn't. You know, you talk about the January Sixers. We had a group of pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian protesters here, and we had thousands of them. They were occupying the streets outside of the of the offices of my office. In fact, I couldn't get from, I was at lunch. I was trying to get back into the building. I couldn't get back into the building because the mob and the police were not going to let me get near, near the crowd. They had to do, they had to escort me into the basement and into a tunnel just to get back in the Longworth building. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And whenever we went through there was a lot of people that had pushed through security. So they blew through security and those individuals were occupying the Cannon Rotunda and they were protesting in the Cannon Rotunda. So you tell me, Mark, we arrested a lot of people on January for what happened on January 6th who were just strolling through the Capitol.
Yeah.
Okay. These people pushed through security. They blew past security and then went in to occupy and protest to the point where they had to be dragged out.
Yeah.
These people had to be, they threw themselves on the floor and had to be dragged out of the building. And they didn't, they took them in a paddy wagon or in a few buses downtown, booked them, released them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I guarantee you there's not going to be a committee of the House of Representatives is going to spend 2 years persecuting those people and then throw them in the can for the rest of their lives or for decades. They're absolutely, people always talk about a two-tier justice system. I've always said there's no such thing because unless all people are treated equally under the law, there is no justice. There is no justice system. It's not a matter of having two tiers. It's a matter of having nothing but an authoritarian, strong-arm government that makes you cooperate or else. But it kind of segues nicely into the next segment. And that was, we've got wars going on in Ukraine, wars going on in the Middle East, and the United States government wanting to fund them all. Now, what's the current aid packet that the president's pushing? $106 billion, with $61 billion for Ukraine. When even the mayor of Kiev, Kishko, the former heavyweight champion of the world, is now saying that his own President Zelensky is a liar and an autocrat and that they're losing the war and that we shouldn't believe him anymore. And I know that you guys are going to be voting on that shortly. How do you feel about all that in light of the fact that we've got a completely open southern border and 100,000-plus Americans dying every year of opioid overdoses?
Yeah, we've made it very clear. Myself and other members of Freedom Caucus have made it very clear to the speaker and to our colleagues that we are not going to just vote, hold our nose and vote no and allow for any funding for Ukraine unless there's real substantive fixes at the border. And I mean real fixes at the border. We don't even want to talk about Ukraine until we see the border policies change. What we've said is we want all of the provisions of what was in House Resolution 2 H.R. 2, which includes really most of it has to do with a lot of it's the Trump era policies, mm-hmm. but putting them into law. But it's also doing a lot of things to eliminate some of the loopholes that the Biden administration has been using mm-hmm. to allow people to, for example, to abuse the asylum system.
Yeah.
And by eliminating that altogether, eliminating those loopholes. And we want that to be implemented to the effect that we want to have it implemented and enforced so that we're not going to talk about Ukraine until we actually see the numbers, drop at the border.
Yeah.
And if the numbers are not going to change, Ukraine is not going to get another dime.
Well, and I had Tom Holman, the former acting director of ICE, on a few weeks ago, and I asked him, even under the existing laws, if Trump got reelected, how long would it take to fix the border? And he said he just talked to the president about it the day before, and he promised him in 90 days he can seal the border under the existing laws if he had the free hand to do it. And yet here we are, all this time into the Biden administration with record illegal immigration every day and amazing amounts of drugs and terrorists coming into this country.
Yeah, that's why, Mark, one of the things that I believe is that unless you make this administration do it, they're not going to do it. To your point, they have the laws in place. If he wants to enforce them, he can do that, but they're not. Yeah. So I think I do think it's important that we do fix our immigration laws. I think that we need to strengthen the laws and eliminate the asylum process, for example, the reform it, make it so that it truly has to be asylum seekers. They can't migrate through other countries on their way to the United States and then declare asylum. That process has to be corrected. But in addition to that, I really think that we just want to make sure that they're actually enforcing the law.
Yeah.
Because we could have the perfect law in place, but if they're not going to enforce it, it's worth toilet paper, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have to make them enforce it before we have a conversation about funding for Ukraine. Look, I don't want to send any more money to Ukraine, but the political dynamic here is that the only way we have an opportunity to actually fix the border and to get a win, a big conservative win, because right now, otherwise, we're just going to play defense. Otherwise, the position of the House is just to stop everything that the Biden administration wants to do, everything that Chuck Schumer wants to do, right? We can't actually accomplish anything. The only way for us to actually accomplish any wins is to negotiate and barter with the Biden administration. And that's why we're talking about possibly securing the border in exchange for any dollars going to Ukraine.
Well, you know, Congressman, you guys in the House of Representatives control the purse strings, and the government runs on money. And everybody's got their hand out and got their pork in the barrel. And if you just cut off their purse strings, I think you might get some cooperation.
Yeah, the problem is that this place has no fiscal responsibility, Mark. Republicans and Democrats, it's been 27 years since they've passed a budget, since they've passed the appropriation bills.
Yeah.
This whole concept to me, I came from the Missouri legislature. We would pass the budget every year. We would balance the budget every year. But this concept that we're not even going to pass the bills. We're just going to pass continuing resolutions to keep all the pork and all the garbage that we've been funding and paying for years in the past, for 27 years, the programs that have expired, that are no longer authorized. We're still going to keep funding them at not only at the previous levels, but at an increased rate, including inflation. And that's what they've been doing for year after year after year for 27 years. That's why this place is a complete train wreck financially.
Yeah, I saw on your ex a post saying that, you know, since you've been in Congress, as bad as you think it might have been, it's worse than you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that shocks me is how many bills get passed, how much money is spent, sometimes without even a vote. Okay, so let me tell you how this process works. In Missouri's legislature, we have what were called consent bills. Those are bills that are supposed to be non-controversial. They have to have no fiscal note, no one in opposition to those bills. And when they have to be voted unanimously out of committee, by both Republicans and Democrats before it can be labeled a consent bill. Then it comes to the consent calendar, which is a fast-tracked calendar, and those consent bills are generally locked down. You can't make any changes to them. And so there's a lot of these bills that pass, you know, things like renaming a road or, you know, a post, things like that. Mm-hmm. That's understandable. Up here in D.C., over the last few administrations under Boehner, under Bryan, under Pelosi, these speakers used basically what we call the consent bill system. They call it suspension, bills that are in suspension, to move all of the big, heavy legislation. So, Mark, here's literally how this worked. Instead of the bills going through committees and being vetted and being, you know, voted on out of committee, and then coming to the Rules Committee, and then going to the floor for a vote, and then members being able to make amendments on these bills on the floor, right? That process was short-tracked, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Instead, the Speaker would just drop these huge omnibus bills directly in the Rules Committee, pass a rule on that bill that says that there can be no amendments added or maybe no changes to the bill, and then send it to the floor. And that's why how we got all these, you know, 1,000-page bills that nobody had ever read. because the speaker didn't want anybody to have time to read it. They wanted to drop it and push it through.
Well, you know, I'm not.
That's still happening. It's still happening.
It's just disgusting. You know, I went long. Hey, could you, if I take a 1 minute break to pay the bills here, can you hang on for another couple of minutes?
Yes.
All right, great. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with 7th District Congressman Eric Burleson.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
Congressman, thanks for coming back on and taking a little extra time. I want to ask you about one further thing. You know, here in Missouri, I'm part of a campaign to vet Republican candidates to make sure that they actually support Republican principles and adhere to the Republican platform. And I don't think I've had an opportunity to chat with you about it directly, but, you know, we have a program where they have a survey to fill out, and then their voting record and the bills they sponsored have been looked at to determine whether or not they're genuinely Republicans. And, you know, Justice Scalia in a case in the Supreme Court in 2000 said that one of the fundamental principles of the First Amendment is that people should have a right to form political parties and to limit membership in those parties to people who actually adhere to the principles of those parties. And so, you know, we, at least on the county level, because the state committee is not in favor of it yet, people are not going to be allowed to have Republican behind their names on the primary ballot unless they're actually Republicans. Do you have any thoughts one way or the other on that process? I mean, it's kind of a rhino preventive drug.
Yeah, I want the voters to get to sniff out the rhinos and get rid of them. They're the ones that make my life more difficult and usually are the bane of my existence. But yeah, this process that you guys are doing, I think is great, especially if you can, you know, if you can do it in a way that's constitutional, that's not, that is not going to be challenged in courts. It sounds like a good thing, but, and I will say this, I would be happy to be a guinea pig and take out the survey because I'm confident that I'm, you know, my values line up with the platform of the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt about that at all. I mean, when you were in the Missouri Senate, you guys like you and Mike Moon and Bill Eigel and other, you know, real constitutional conservatives were the only people standing up against the tide. But once again, what, 7 or 8 senators out of 34, you guys took a beating from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Because the Missouri Capitol, unfortunately, the vast majority of Republicans are not conservative.
Yeah.
Probably about 30% of the people on the federal level too, about 20 to 30% of the people up here are the conservatives. And the, like, you know, for example, I'm a member of Freedom Caucus. There's very few members of Freedom Caucus. So you have 220 members. Freedom Caucus is about 30 to 40 members.
Yeah.
So it's disappointing how many people are here. There's two types of people in public office: people that want the job, they like the glory, they like the title, and then there's people, and then they like the power, and then there's people that just want to save America, or just want to save the state of Missouri, and they're not, they don't care about the power, they don't care about the title or the glory, they just want to save the country.
Well, I know that you're one of them. I know you're a stellar example of that in the Missouri Senate, and I know you're doing a great job up there, you know, fighting back the deep state and the swamp. I had one last topic I wanted to chat with you about, and this has come up in relation to what you're talking about today, the pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian protests breaking out around the country. And the call, you know, once again, as I said in the intro, one of the things that we always stand for is, as constitutional conservatives, is freedom of speech and the absolute right of people to say, to peacefully protest and to petition the government for their grievances. And, you know, within as long as you do it nonviolently and peacefully, peacefully and patriotically, the way Donald Trump said it, that the First Amendment should protect all those rights. Ever since last October the 7th, I've heard nothing but a cry from a lot of the same Republicans who used to talk about free speech and the First Amendment, calls for eliminating hate speech and for censorship. And so I just thought I'd at the risk of putting you on the carpet, ask you what you think about that.
Yeah, I think that I think it's what's disturbing. Look, I agree with you. I think that people should have a right to protest and to protest peacefully, regardless of their views. No matter, even if you have a disgusting, horrible political view, like people that protest for Hamas, I think their views are disgusting and horrible, and they have a right. But they have a right to protest, and they have a right to free speech. What they don't have a right to is to communicate with terrorists. They don't have a right to, which is what has happened. So the protesters that I just spoke about that flooded into the Cannon building, we have intel that some of them were in communications with leaders of Hamas. So you have Hamas coordinating, you know, basically a protest in the United States of America.
Yeah.
So let's be like, we need to call a spade for a spade. A lot of these protests are being coordinated and by a propaganda machine that's come out of Hamas. And basically, we're at war. I mean, they're at war with us. They're at war with the West. They're at war with Israel. And we need to recognize what it is. Yeah. And I think it's, while we want to protect free speech, we have to realize that those people and the people they're connected with are very dangerous.
Yeah. And it's similar to the Antifa and BLM protests, you know, a couple of years ago, in that they were being organized and were actually a terrorist army fighting against, you know, traditional America. And yet, you know, look how many of those people actually went to jail, how many of those people were actually prosecuted, as opposed once again to the January Sixers. But it's the same thing here. You know, from my mind, everybody's got a right to it's easy to say people have the right to say things you agree with. But the only time you can truly support the First Amendment is when you have to come out in favor of people saying things that you vigorously disagree with, as long as they do so peacefully and without working against or trying to destroy the very country that supports that First Amendment.
Yeah, exactly, Mark.
Well, Congressman, I sure appreciate you spending some time with us here today. You're doing a great job up there, and I look forward to having you on the show again.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you very much.
Keep up the great work.
We'll do our best. You do the same. And by the way, pull in those purse strings.
Yes, sir. I'll do everything I can.
All righty. Thank you very much. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was United States Representative from the 7th District of Missouri, Eric Burleson. And we're going to turn tides here just a little bit and talk to somebody on a very similar but different background. And a foreigner, now an American citizen, who's going to talk to us about the vision for America in the future, and we'll be right back in.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey, on fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on fire on NewstalkSTL.
Welcome back to Mark McCloskey on Fire. We have with us this afternoon a very special guest. He's a gentleman who was born and raised in South Africa, and now he's a United States citizen. He's is a ordained minister, and he's the leader of an organization called Take America Back, which is something I think is near and dear to the hearts of everybody that's listening to this program here today. So let's welcome Jack Stagman to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm just doing great. Looking forward to this, Mark. I've heard so much about you. and nice to see you in person.
and ditto the same. Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself, your bio, and what you're doing these days.
Sure. Well, I've always been involved in business. I was an entrepreneur at a young age. And then, of all things, got involved in politics in 1993 at the end of apartheid. And I co-founded the first Christian political party, and I was their national chairman for 2 years. And then handed it over to some others to take over. And then in 1998, I was ordained, came out to the U.S. on a preaching engagement in 2000, and came back. And, I had a calling on my life to leave our country. My forefathers came from England in 1700 to Cape Town. So I'm the very first person to leave the country. So my wife and I, on the 1st of April 2001, left our country, and we've been here in Virginia. It's actually Northern Virginia. We stay in a town called Leesburg, Virginia. And we've been here close on 23 years. When we first came here, I headed up a ministerial association. So I can speak about the condition of the church with thorough experience. Mm-hmm. And then going back this year, April, we put on an event at Virginia Beach. And it essentially was rededicating America back to God at First Landing. And we found out that most people do not know the history of First Landing. In fact, when I ask people the question, where and when did the first settlers arrive, where a covenant was made, well, 90% do not know how to answer that. And 10% will say Plymouth or Jamestown, and they're all wrong. Yeah. Because what actually happened is they arrived on April the 29th, 1607, at Virginia Beach, what today is called Cape Henry. And there were three ships, and there was a minister on board, and they came ashore, they planted a cross, and we've actually got a copy of the actual dedication of the covenant to God. And that's an amazing thing. So we rededicated America back to God in April, and we had some wonderful speakers there like Glenn Beck, David Barton, Michelle Bachman, and many others. I mean, it came out of the blue. People said, you can't put an event like that together. You need at least a year. Well, we did it in 5 months, and we had over 1 million views. And so a lot of people now know about First Landing. So, and then from First Landing, Glenn Beck made a comment at the end of the night, and he said, we need to take back America and the world, and I've got 12 million listeners, and let's work with them to make this happen. So I've just written a letter now to Glenn to say, we've been pondering this question now for 7 months. We've now got a blueprint plan, and can we meet to take America back?
Yeah. We're taking so America
that's where
back.
We are as today.
Yeah. Well, you know, taking America back is an important thing. Most of the people that are listening to this program would agree that the left, the deep state, the people that want to create a single world socialist government have been working for decades or centuries in the real world to take control of the world for their own personal benefit and to the detriment of individualism and freedom. And I know that that's what the Take America Back project is, but just tell us a little bit about what we can do to assist you in this program, what we can do to take America back.
Well, I think the first thing is we have a number of military people, senior rank people, and when we first started talking about this, they said you need to look at this in military terms, and you need to recognize that for many generations, the deep state or global elitist, whatever you want to call them, they have looked at how do we take the world and control the world, and so they've identified all the major primary spheres of influence. And they've spent trillions of dollars over many generations to take on all of those areas, and they have captured all of those areas. So the first thing is we have to recognize that it's already been captured. Now, we have to take this back, and the only way we can do this as a grassroots level, I think nationally it's too far gone, and in our state of Virginia it's too far gone. The only way we believe we can take this back is at the local level. And so I'm sure you've heard about the Seven Mountains Strategy and the Seven Spheres of Influence.
Yeah.
Well, we did some research going back several months, and we realized that many people did not fit into a lot of those spheres, and we needed to get some more. And so we sent you the list. There's now 20 primary spheres of influence, like your education, government, arts, entertainment, and many, many, many more. And so we thought that the way we could do this, we set ourselves a goal of bringing together, mobilizing 100 million people in 5 years or less, and to connect everybody within the same sphere of influence. So if you're an educator and you've got a passion for that, we'll link you at a county level with all the other people that have identified education as their passion. And some people have two or three more. And so I think this is essentially getting groups of people together, like-minded people, because you can have a shotgun approach, which I think many people have tried to do this. And if you and I are fishermen, you and I can do well together. But if we meet somebody that plays a different sport to us, well, maybe we don't talk as well together. Yeah. So I think that whole simple principle is, you know, getting like-minded people together. And a good example of that, I have a friend of mine in Virginia Beach. He's retired as a United Airlines pilot. He was also involved in the military, flying different airplanes. And I connected him with a South African friend who has a business in America, also with aircraft. And so I was in a three-way call, and I connected the two, and literally I had to keep quiet for 2 hours. And what do you think they spoke about? Flying, which was their great passion.
Yeah.
And so it's a simple principle of getting like-minded people together and giving everybody a simple vision. We need to take America back, and then leave it up to the local groups to develop their own strategies. And so we're not telling anybody what to do. All we're doing is we provide the communication system, a database, and they will then be able to connect one another across 3,160 counties.
Yeah,
well, so it's a very simple strategy. It's nothing complicated.
Yeah, well, here's something that I have recognized now for a long time, and that is, well, and particularly in the modern world, there's tens of thousands of video blogs and tens of thousands of people out there advocating to take America back, to restore traditional American values, to restore us to the Christian nation that we once were, but they're all fighting for bandwidth. They're all fighting for their little fiefdoms. And that it is a divide and conquer strategy that has been intentionally pushed upon us. And what we really need to do if we're going to win this thing is we need to find a way to have everybody divest themselves of their little egocentric fiefdoms and pull together as one people towards one goal of taking America back. And that's what I think organizations like yours that can become a center for people to coalesce and not fight each other for bandwidth, but to come together and say, the only way we're going to win this thing is if the grassroots level, if on a county level, on an individual level, will say, we will not tolerate this anymore. We're going to take this country back and be free people.
You know, that's absolutely true. The highlight that's emerged after our first landing event, and incidentally, we pulled that event together because we felt the Lord saying to us that we must go back to origin. And I didn't know what that meant until I started looking at the history of Jamestown, Plymouth, and then first landing. Then we recognized very quickly the gospel first came to Virginia Beach, and that's where we have to go back, and that's why we did a rededication service. Anyway, so after this event, around about May or June, I was contacted by a county in Virginia, and they said they've been gathering together for 16 months, and they had 60 people getting together every month. And so I went out and I met with the group, and they're now busy organizing into the different spheres of influence, because what they were doing, they were sort of going at a shotgun approach. And it's like at a target at 100 yards, you try and shoot that target, a small target with a shotgun, you're going to miss it at 100 yards. But with a 30-06, you can put your bullet right in the middle. So it's focused effort. Now, the interesting thing is that group is now starting to work within those different spheres of influence, still meeting on a regular basis, but they are organized. And so we're using them as a pilot project for America, because we've got to point the way somewhere. Well, here it's been done. So we're hoping to have a major event in Northern Virginia with about 10 counties, probably in early May. It's going to be like a national launch. And so we're going to bring that pilot project onto the stage, because there are many programs. I mean, I know, for example, that the Reawaken Tour I think they are doing an amazing job. But when they have these events, they have 70 speakers, which is excellent. And I think they've probably done, they've probably made the biggest impact in America in terms of waking the American up. However, when they go back home, they come in from all over the country. There needs to be a plan for local level.
Yeah.
And so I'm not aware of any other plan. There may well be, but I'm not aware of any plans that actually activates the local level to focus in a specific area.
Well, so, let me ask you this, because our time is running short. If people want to get involved in Take America Back Project, if people want to be involved in what you're doing and help out, how can they reach you? How can they find you?
Okay, we've got a website in the development. We'll probably only see that early in the new year. But what they can do is email me on jackstagman@comcast.net, or they can telephone me on 703-581-4390. That's in Virginia. And I'll be happy to chat with them. We're just in the stage right now. We are busy interviewing all of our trustees because we're setting up a trust for this, which will be finished in 2 weeks' time. And then officially we'll launch everything we're going to be doing early in January. So we are prepared. We are all understand what we're up against. We're all ordinary people. We're nothing. We're no wealthy people. But you know what? We're all just patriots. We know our gifting. We have decided to run this race together, and nothing will stop us.
I agree. If the people all pull together, there's no force that can resist it. You know, one of the things that I find appalling all the time, and this is kind of how you started the conversation today, is how little the average American knows about American history, knows about the founding of our government, knows about the basic principles, the God-given rights that were derived from us being human beings made in the image of the Lord, which were then incorporated into the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It's shocking how little the average American knows about that. And I think that's a big part of what we need to do is educate Americans on what it means to be an American, what the United States of America, this bold experiment in freedom, was founded to do, and how much of it we have lost.
In my opinion, we can't go forward unless we go backwards and go back into where our origin started. Because truly, we have a wonderful Christian origin. And so that, I think, is what we had to do. And now we can move ourselves forward. I'm very optimistic. I know there'll be huge challenges. It's like fighting Goliath. But you know what? We have the Lord on our side. We do not have to be afraid. I know that I was born for a time such as this. We've all gone through so many trials in life. But at the end of the day, the Lord has prepared us for a time such as this. And it's going to need everyone to come to the table and put in a lot of effort. We're literally at the precipice going over, and only the Lord can save us. But what I have seen is that a remnant is coming together. I'm meeting people from the remnant across the country almost on a daily basis. I've just come back from Branson, Missouri, and we met some amazing people. And guess what? We're all on the same page.
Yeah, yeah.
So that remnant, it may only be 3% across the country, but 3% can make a great impact across America. And that's what I think. The Lord is a sneaky person. He's got this plan going, and he's got all of these people. He's like dovetailing us all together. And suddenly we find, oh my gosh, you've got the same plan as I've got. And we start to work together. And it's just wonderful to see. It's like a tapestry. The Lord has created this tapestry, and he's like given us each a part of the puzzle. And if we sit around the table and say, well, what's my part and where do you fit in? Suddenly you find these parts starting to fit together, and you can see a beautiful picture emerging. And the Lord has not forgotten America. Well, he's very much involved in what's happening. And although I think we still have some dark days to go through, I think we're going to have some light at the end of the tunnel, and it's going to be a good light.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to have to let you go there. Appreciate you being on the program. We'll definitely have you back on when all this gets rolling in the early part of next year. And, we'll stay in touch, and I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. Blessings. Thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure.
Okay.
Well, that was Jack Stegman, who is trying to take back America. You know, we're all trying to take back America. But you know what we're not going to do to take back America is to destroy it in the process. And I can't tell you, nothing ruffles my feathers more than having the same Republicans that have talked and talked and talked about free speech now saying there's certain things you're not allowed to talk about. If you're allowed to talk, you're allowed to talk about anything. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a free country, or at least it used to be. And if you can't express your opinion, no matter how much it pisses somebody else off, no matter how much some snowflake might melt, then this isn't the United States of America. And you can't have leaders of the Republican Party, you can't have what are supposedly conservative talk show hosts talking about how we can't talk about this or we can't talk about that, because that's not the United States of America. In this country, you've got a right to say anything you damn well please. You got a right to take any political position you damn well please. And if you convince enough people to vote for you that what you're saying is correct, you got a right to get elected, and you got a right to hold that office until the people that elected you tell you they don't want you anymore. It's not up to Congress to decide who should be in Congress. It's not up to the media to say who should be in Congress. It's up to the voters to say who should be in Congress, who should be in the House, who should be in the Senate, and who should be the President of the United States. And if the left doesn't like it, to hell with them. If the right doesn't like it, to hell with them. If the talk show hosts don't like it, to hell with them. If the people want it, and the people vote for it, then by God, the people ought to get it. And if they make a mistake, we'll figure it out, and we'll fix it the next time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for paying attention, and don't pay any attention to the powers that be, because they just want to destroy us. Till next time, Mark McCloskey. On fire.
She was singing, "Don't turn around, the commissar's in town."
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com.
The faster you will die.
Mark McCloskey on fire on News Talk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.